Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Elaine Grohman on Earth Wisdom Circles. And today I have the absolute pleasure to have Dr. Robin Smith as the guest on my show. Dr. Smith has such an illustrious career. I'm just so honored and touched to be able to have the opportunity to speak with her and to bring her wisdom and heart, most importantly, to the airways and around the world. She is a business leader. She's a physician, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and she is an expert in the field of regenerative medicine and predictive analytics. She is the founder and president and chairman of the board of the Cura Foundation and STEM for Life, and is active globally in many nonprofit organizations. She serves on the board of the Stanford Health and is an overseer for the New York University Langen Medical Center in New York City. And she is a co-author of Cells Are the New Cure, which is such a, I'm just so looking forward to talking to you about that. She has received her medical degree from Yale School of Medicine and her MBA from the Wharton School of Business. And she received her honorary doctorate of science from the Thomas Jefferson Medical School. So Dr. Smith, I don't know how you squeeze everything you do into 24 hours. Good gracious. Thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here today.
I'm really delighted. So I had the pleasure of learning about you from being invited to participate or to attend the Explore the Mind, Body, and Soul conference that you were pivotal in creating with the Vatican. So we'll talk about that. And thanks to our mutual friend, Stephen Shia, for making that introduction and inviting me to that. Very, very pleased and important. So tell us about you. Tell us about the work that you do, Dr. Smith, with the stem cell and healing and how that is the new really face of medicine, of how we're going to change the way healthcare moves going forward.
Well, you know, I think we've learned over the years how important our immune system is. And now we're learning how to take those cells of our immune system to not just fight illnesses when they occur, but actually sort of soup them up, if you will, to have an impact on cancers and infectious disease and really to repair tissue, restore function, and use these cells really as therapies so that we can move towards cures as opposed to just treating symptoms.
Well, that is so amazing because I had a couple of years ago the opportunity to meet some people that were doing some things in regenerative medicine. And what is so brilliant about it is it's following what nature already does.
That's right.
Nature knows how to use our own physiology, our own biology, because we have the problem and we have the cure within our bodies.
That's right. And as we get older, those cells are a little less effective. And so how do you take those cells and soup them up so that they can have an impact?
So for those who are not familiar with this term, what the stem cells do, can you just give a little bit broader understanding for those? Because literally people around the world are listening to this conversation. What is the role of our cells in relation to rebuilding our physiology? Could you explain that, please?
Sure. So I'll give you a little stem cell 101, if you will. So
please.
So when the sperm and the egg come together, when we're fertilized, that then divides again. And around day number four, you have this phase called the blastocyst. And that's where you can make lots of little robins, if you will. So that's the time at which you can make the person. And as those cells continue to divide and divide, they become more specialized. And that's how we get our hair and our eyes and different organs in our body. And so these cells have less plasticity. So you can't make lots of little people, but they make different organs, different parts of your body that allow you to be who you are today. And so these early cells, these stem cells that are very, very early, those obviously are the ones that become the person. But as these stem cells continue to grow, if you will, and divide and make more and more and more, they become more specialized. So it's really this balance between being early enough to regenerate and repair, but yet be specialized enough so that they become the tissue that you want them to be and not sort of random tissues in the wrong places.
Well, what I think we forget is in medicine, we have become so specialized into compartmentalizing the body. The body is intelligent. There's such an innate intelligence that we have often overlooked. And when we follow that intelligence, then the answers are there.
That's right. And the cells are smart. So they hone to areas of injury. So they know where to go. We signal for these cells to come to where they need to repair different tissues. So our cells are very smart. And, you know, as you're dividing, your cells continue to mature, you make mistakes, you have errors, and those get recognized by the body and discarded. And those errors can be repaired as well. And obviously sometimes, which cancers and otherwise and insults from the injury, it goes too far and you can't repair yourself. But that's really how we're developed to be able to sustain injury and errors in replication and be okay.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because what's so important as a leader in healthcare and as a female leader in healthcare, you're such a trailblazer and really kind of holding the torch, if you will, to help us all understand that to heal is natural. And if we help the body heal, then there's a whole other ease about it. Now, certainly there's trauma and there's illness, but if we can ease into it, I would imagine that the body then is so much more resilient in that way.
That's right. I think keeping your immune system as strong as it can be allows you to fight, illness. And we're learning time, the mind, body, the whole connection can have an impact on your immune system to keep it healthy and keep it strong. And it's what you eat and it's the environment and stress levels. You know, inflammation now is being seen as a very big sort of culprit, if you will, in causing cancer, heart disease, and really lowering the immune system. So we're learning more now about our environment and how we can impact to make ourselves healthier.
So as a leader in healthcare, Dr. Smith, you know, I'm sure that you have, especially as a female leader, because we understand business is business and a lot of it is male dominated. So I thank you for your courage and your determination and your heart to help people understand to see this more holistically. First, as a woman, I want to thank you for that. But also, how have you found that other physicians are beginning to embrace this new concept or old concept, really, of how the body works? Are they embracing it along with you, or how is that happening for you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I think back earlier, and certainly from medical school, this wasn't really part of our teaching. We really weren't taught about how food can be a medicine, how your environment can have an impact. And so we're starting to learn more and more how these things really do affect health and wellness. And we're starting to see other physicians embrace it. And now it really is wellness and prevention is really part of medicine today. And we're seeing medical schools look more toward teaching this, in the academic setting. But I would say more and more, we're seeing health and wellness be more of a totality of an intervention, as opposed to just you get sick and then we have to, you know, bring a therapy to the patient.
Yeah. So
I do think that medicine is moving in this direction and people are embracing this a lot more.
So truly that it becomes health care of your health, rather than just mitigation of challenges.
Absolutely. And I think now we're starting to see even more and more that it's not that easy. Part of it is knowledge. You have to teach people, but part of it is behavior. And it's hard to change behavior. You know, I used to say, I was once speaking at a conference and we had all these incredible individuals talking about how to prevent cancer. And I always said, you know, that's really important to know what to do, but we also have to work on people's behavior. I mean, when I was growing up, my mom always said, eat, you'll feel better. So it was a way that I dealt with stress. And so, you know, that's always a part of it too, is how to actually not just know what you should be doing, but how do you change that in your lifestyle? It's not
right.
That easy.
That's true. And because as we see that so many people, they have belief systems that guide their thinking. They have their personal experiences. They have may or may not have had good guidance in their life. They may or may not have good, healthy social structures. So I think if we look at people more lovingly and help them to understand they deserve health, it's their right to be healthy, that rather than it's a privilege to be healthy, it's their right. So then we have to change how we think about ourselves as individuals collectively.
That's absolutely true. I think it's both in their access to care,
yes,
but they're also wanting to be an advocate for themselves and be a stakeholder in their own health. And it's definitely a shift and getting people to see that. And we're always seeing, you know, as you talked a little bit, and I'm sure we'll get to this, the conference, but one of the things we learned, which really is incredible, is there is a biological impact in empathy and compassion and giving toward yourself. So as you always think, I'll do it for someone else, but it actually shows that it impacts you to be more empathetic, more caring, more giving. And they've actually done studies, neurological studies, to show the impact on health. So it really is a lot more than just, you know, going to the doctor for your yearly physical. There's a lot more to it in how you live and how you interact with others that has an impact on your personal health as well as theirs.
Well, and this brings me beautifully to, how did you become so involved with the Vatican? And you know, how did those big doors open?
It's a really interesting story. You know, and many people look at me and say, you know, how does a Jewish girl from New York, how did this happen? How did you become important in this sort of initiative and teaching? And I think, you know, for me, I've really learned, and I think, as you said, pointed out earlier, I was very early as a female in areas like, you know, urology, as a physician, in the stem cell research, and sort of how do you bring new transformative technologies? How do you bring change into play? And how do you work with people to educate? And so for me, being so excited about where I saw healthcare going as it relates to stem cell therapy and sort of the biology of this, I realized that we had to educate people and who, because there was so much confusion and teaching was needed on what this was all about. And, you know, there was a lot of controversy between embryonic stem cells, adult stem cells, and what did this all mean? That if I could go to someone like the Catholic Church and align in a way to say, you may look at this perspective differently. We all want to do good. We all want to improve human health. And here's a way that you can be supportive about a technology that is consistent with the beliefs. And let's work together to educate people that they should be excited about this technology and the impact that it can have. And so that was the reason to go there. And Cardinal Ravasi, who was very prolific and very smart cardinal on the Pontifical Council for Culture, he said, look, the Ten Commandments are important, all the things you shouldn't do, but let's work together and help people learn and understand things that they can do, that they should do, that can have an impact on themselves and on others. And that really began this partnership where we took people, maybe different religions, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different lifestyles, and really bring them together, putting differences aside and seeing how we can align, find commonality, and have an impact.
Well, that was what was so, I was very touched by the diversity of the individuals that spoke. And that, you know, because in being raised Catholic myself, although I'm not a practicing Catholic, I have to honestly say, you know, it was interesting to see that, you know, there used to be such a taboo, if I can use that term, about stem cells and all of those things that the church was vehemently against. So it's interesting how that you were able to forge a new conversation about that.
Well, part of it's education, right? Maybe not understanding that all stem cells are not alike, that there are differences. Where you get them makes a difference. And actually, we've seen the science advance in the non-embryonic stem cells more. We've seen a lot more advances in different areas. So I think part of it is education and taking the time and effort and making the explanations from people that they can relate to, that they can understand. Pope Benedict was extremely supportive about what we were doing. We had a conference. They learned certainly a lot at the Vatican. And it's important because when you're ill, many people do go to their clergy. That's where they go for comfort. And so it's important for clergy to be able to understand and be able to speak with their parishioners on ways, instead of just saying, no, this is negative, right, to really understand what this is about. And so, you know, Benedict said, this was an amazing conference, do more. How do we get to more people? So we wrote our first book called The Healing Cell. And he wrote the foreword so that people really understood that you don't have to choose between science and faith, that there is an opportunity here to do good, to have an impact, to embrace science, and do it in a way that's consistent with the Catholic Church's teachings.
Well, and it's interesting because science is really the study of life. So life preceded everything. So they're not opposites at all.
That's right. And I think if you believe, if you're very religious, then you can say, well, God gave us these tools to be able to provide these medicines to enhance the cells of the body to treat a person. And if you're less religious, you know, you can focus on the science and do it in a way that you're not being inconsistent with other people's beliefs. So yeah. I think you're absolutely right. It's a new beginning, if you will, in healthcare. And the more that we can make people well and be able to maintain their abilities to be functional and be active and part of the community, it's critical for our future. So people just don't want to live longer. They want to live healthier and better. Yes. And yes. We know how to do that.
Yes. About 20 some years ago, I had the great opportunity to work with two medical schools here in Michigan when the NIH first gave out the grants to bring integrative medicine more out into the world. So I had the opportunity to work with medical students, the faculty as an energy healer, because that's what I do.
Interesting.
So I'd love to have deeper conversations with you about that. But we don't, you know, we have to remember we have been given this life. We don't own this life. Mm-hmm. So we have to learn how to work with this gift. And in the Hippocratic Oath, one of the first phrases is first do no harm.
That's
so
right.
Just that phrase alone is how do you be peaceful? How do you let the river of life flow through you so that you're not fighting everything, you know, which is so important. And the reality is you and I were all in this life together for a reason.
That's right. And I think being positive and supportive and caring toward others and the environment is important for the next generation.
Absolutely. And then you use the term medicines. You know, our food is our medicine. It was the farm was the first pharmacy, you know.
It's and very interesting.
Yeah, we've kind of divided it in our mind and we need to bring it back together and
Absolutely.
Understand the language that we use so that we're working together in so many environments.
That's right. And we're starting to see how things in the environment, not just food, but even things like the even cannabis, right? And psychedelics that come from mushrooms, people actually are really looking, doing clinical trials and seeing how those can have an impact on people's well-being and even health issues, especially around depression, anxiety, PTSD, et cetera. So we're starting to really see this part of future of medicine.
Yes. So can you please tell us, Dr. Smith, about the Cura Foundation? What is that? How did that come about?
So when it started, it was really about stem cells. And it was how do we get people to understand what stem cells were, how they could have an impact in regenerative medicine. And we brought people together, stakeholders in health. It could be patients, patient advocates, religious leaders, politicians, business leaders, philanthropists. And we really sat and said, there are issues in healthcare and how do we fix them? And can cell therapy be a solution? And we started off, you know, with this dialogue that then grew and grew and grew. And so we really have created a foundation where we create networks around the world of people, stakeholders, influencers that really can look at a problem, determine a solution, work together, and have an impact to improve human health globally. And that's really what started off as just stem cells has grown dramatically because, as you said earlier in the program, there's many things that can influence health and well-being. And some of it is medicine and therapeutics, and others are things within the environment. If you look at centurions, people who live over 100, they may be different religions, but the one thing they all have in common is belief, spirituality. They believe in something. And so we need to start looking at other parts of our bodies and our well-being and determine how to make ourselves, our family, our communities, and then globally, how to make it better, safer for people around the world.
Yes. And as they call the blue zones for those individuals that live in excess of 100 years. In fact, a woman that I know was her grandfather was one of those individuals in Virginia. And the thing that was so beautiful when they spoke to him was his deep connection to the earth, the water, being with the earth, being very, very mindful of what he ate and respectful of what he ate and appreciative of what he ate. So there wasn't this absence of mind of what we consume. It was very, very conscious of what we consume. And that makes a huge difference because then you're willing to have it be available to everyone in a different way.
Absolutely. And, you know, for the listeners who didn't have a chance and don't know exactly what you're talking about when you say blue zones, if you look at our conference, which is at the Vatican Conference 2021, and you look at Saturday in the morning, just in that 9 to 10 o'clock, the last 9 minutes there was Dan Buettner, who did the National Geographics on mm-hmm. the blue zones, talking about the blue zones and all those five things that have such an impact on longevity, health, and well-being. I've watched it so many times, I can't begin to tell you how it's such a quick 9 minutes. You're sorry it's over, but it's so impressive to see how all of these things interconnect to health and well-being.
And it's also about community, isn't it?
It is.
And I think that that's what you're doing so beautifully as a woman and as a woman leader and as a physician and as a businesswoman. You can wear many hats simultaneously with ease and really be able to speak passionately and intelligently about how all these things are never opposed to one another. The business is not opposed to religion. Religion is not opposed to life. But what we have to understand is how do we help people feel their own worth? How do we help people begin to understand that community and relationships are ultimately what we need to build so that we don't have people that are separated from for socioeconomic reasons or for religious differences? We're all here on this beautiful earth together for a reason.
And purpose. On top of it, right? People need to feel purpose as they age. They need to feel part of a community and there's a purpose to what they're doing and their being and that loneliness is terrible. One of the speakers was saying how loneliness is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
It's true.
Right?
It's
so, true. You know, we need that community. We need that caring for one another and giving people purpose to, you know, for themselves. And so that's a very important piece. And in those communities, we see many generations, they rely on each other so that as people age, they have purpose in their families and in their communities. And so that's a critical piece to what we're seeing is how do people not be lonely? How do they interact? How do they have purpose to wake up in the morning and feel that they're really a part of something?
Yes, because I think I have this conversation so often with individuals that I speak with, and they think that a purpose is such a lofty idea
mm-hmm.
that they have to be known for something. And it's just about love. How do you let someone know that they mean something to you and you mean something to them? That's the purpose. It's to be love in action. That's
Absolutely.
What it is. Love and action.
Right. It's not some daunting task.
Yes.
So it's a very good point.
So, Robin, so since this global conference, how are you seeing people knitting together? How are you seeing people opening their minds and being willing to say, well, and sometimes their pocketbooks, because, you know, the reality is you need funding to do the things
you do
that need to happen. So can you tell us a little bit of what has happened post this fifth conference? It was called the Fifth International Vatican Conference, Exploring the Mind, Body, and Soul.
Yes, it was in May. You know, it's a really good point. I think, you know, one of the things Stephen has taught me is about catalytic capital. How do you do something and make it more impactful? How do you get people to join, to whether it's resources, whether it's, as you said, you know, financial? It's how do you get people working together to accelerate and fuel the initiative? And that's really what we see. I mean, it was so interesting to talk about sort of vaccines and how we're really getting through this crisis and how to get vaccines to people around the world. It's one thing whether you choose to take a vaccine, but you should have the availability to have it. And then how do you educate people with either peers or people they respect in the community where they feel safe that they can ask questions to and where they are able to understand, you know, the value of being vaccinated. So we're starting to see, I've gotten a lot of calls to connect people. How do we get the resources there? How do we ensure, you know, that as quickly as possible, we can get over this hump and get people around the world, you know, vaccinated. What does that mean for those who can't get vaccinated for whatever reason they've had? They have access to it, but say they've had a organ transplant or something that chemotherapy in a way that their immune system maybe can't get revved up for the vaccine to elicit immunity towards this. What can be done? What studies can be done to show how you can impact those individuals so that they can be protected against COVID or any of its variants? So we see people getting together, understanding expertise in the room, and how do you work together to make it accessible and affordable to all?
And you had mentioned the name Stephen, so you're talking about Stephen Shia, our mutual friend. That's how I know about you. Whose family foundation, the CAD Holdings, is really helping to bring a lot of things together. But I think to your point of what you were just making, Dr. Smith, is that, you know, we have to look at what is the base of our immune system. And that's good nutrition. We have to make sure that people have good nutrition so that their body can start to begin to have the minerals, the water, all of the building blocks that are needed to have a healthy immune system. Because if you just give them somebody a vaccine, but they have no food, you know, you're like adding rocks to a falling landslide, you know?
Absolutely. That's such a good point. And it's not just your body, but it's your mind.
Yes.
And people say, well, how is that possible? But people show that the diet can really have an impact to clarity, to memory, to energy. And so you're right. It's really important that you have proper nutrition. There was a lot in our conference about, you know, you are what you eat, but also about plant-based diets and how that can have an impact. And we're seeing more and more the importance of that sustenance, if you will. And the time of day can make a difference as to when you eat and how you eat. So, you know, it's really impressive. And many times it takes, unfortunately, something terrible, a cancer or something to happen to you, a heart attack, to make a change. And I think what we're really hoping is from a world's perspective, we'll be able to make the changes as a preventative measure as opposed to a wake-up call, if you will.
Yes. And I think that if we change the way we educate people, as you use the term education, from birth, you know, to care for the earth, we are composed of all the minerals in the earth. Our very life began in water. You know, that we have distanced ourselves from the natural world, forgetting we are life in action.
Mm-hmm.
We are a part of it. We're not just inhabitants here. You know, this is our one and only home. So it's really bringing all of it together instead of in silos, which has been so challenging to have one person have a conversation with someone else. We need to take the silos down.
That's so true. And I think also as medicine has become so much more specific, people have gotten siloed, right? I mean, we've seen in medicine, you go to your cardiac conference or you go to your infectious disease, if you're an infectious disease specialist, and people aren't learning as much from each other. And the value of that we've seen now more than ever with immuno-oncology, using the immune system to treat cancer. And those were the immunologists getting together with the oncologists. And how do you do this? And what's changed medicine? I mean, there's so many. I wrote a Wall Street Journal op-ed. And, you know, some people have said, well, what did you mean when you said it's an exciting time to have cancer? But there's so many more options today than there has been in the future. It's never a good time to get cancer. You never want that. But if you do, you want to be in a time where if one thing doesn't work, you can get another treatment. You can try another. And there's hope for, you know, your future. And then, of course, as technology continues to improve, you know, there'll be more and more for the future. But melanoma was a death sentence. And now, you know, people in the 90s is percent of people, you know, do well and have positive outcomes. So we really are seeing medicine changing very, very dramatically.
Yes. And I think that we have to recognize that we all came here in the same way, that we are all spirit. And in order to live, it requires a body. We can only live because we have a body. And our emotions are that part of us that we have so little understanding of what they mean. Our emotions are information, and we have been so guided by not understanding our emotions, and that they're signals. There, mm-hmm. Is this good for me? Is this not good for me? So that we learn how to use this beautiful thing that we have that's called a mind. And our mind is not simply our intellect. It is our choices.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we do that? So we become this very powerful being that we're meant to be, you know? And it's really beautiful. And I think that we neglect to see how our thinking immediately affects our physiology. So I often share with people, imagine right now you're biting into a cold, juicy lemon. And immediately your mouth salivates. Our thoughts are so immediately responded to by our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about just something simple like that, or where others are angry or they're tired or they're poor, or all of these things that just run through their mind, we have to start at the beginning.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think your experiences guide you, right? Yeah. That experience of that lemon might be very different for you as for someone else, right? I mean, it's what you experience and what goes around that experience that can have a lot of impact on who you are and how you develop and where you go. So it's interesting. And, you know, one of the things we focused a little bit about is what makes you human. And so the choice, the fact that you have ethics and, you know, moral choices, that isn't something that a non-human is necessarily able to do. They have choices, but they don't make it with the moral compass. And
they have instincts.
They have instincts. That's right.
For survival.
That's right. And you can learn and teach them. And obviously we've seen incredible things from Jane Goodall with you know, sort of in her whole career and her life, but there is a difference and we have to embrace that difference and really think about it and think about what that does for ourselves, for our community. And you know, it's a responsibility.
So again, my guest is Dr. Robin Smith. And Dr. Smith, what do you see yourself? How do you see yourself embracing, especially women leaders? Because I know that you're known as a woman leader, and thank you for that. Mm-hmm. How are you able to change the conversation? Because you are a woman.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really interesting. People's differences are important. And you have different perspectives that you can bring together that can really make a difference. We're seeing that now on public boards, the requirements to have women, to have diversity. And I think for me in my whole career, it's always about you never say no, right? There's always a way. There's always an opportunity. You shouldn't be afraid. Your differences are what empower you and why it's important for you to be part of that conversation. And you can do many things. You can do, you know, balance family and work and make a difference. And, you know, always be positive and look for others who can help you and be work with you. I think if I always say my greatest success is my ability to know what I know and what I don't know and not be afraid to ask. Mm-hmm. And it's about bringing people together who together can make a better impact and the result is better than it would be if you do it on your own. And just never forgetting, it's not a weakness. It's not, you know, togetherness is important.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with your everyday world? Obviously, you're in New York. You can hear the sirens and everything.
I know, sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. It's reality.
It is reality.
Where is your office? Where do you work?
I am right in the middle in Manhattan, and that's what you're hearing now. And we've had a lot of uptick in crime, and it's been a challenging time for people getting through COVID and sort of the economic impact that it's had. It's really been challenging here.
Yeah, and the isolation, obviously, as well.
It is. Yeah, the isolation's been terrible. And unfortunately, it's left a lot of people on the streets and mental health and drug use is up, I think, everywhere. And we're seeing a lot of sort of urgent need to look at people's mental health and try and have an impact.
So Dr. Smith, is going back to regenerative medicine and stem cells, is there any part of our body that does not benefit if there was something that was employing stem cells to try to make a correction or to boost the body in some way?
Yeah, the way I always look at it is there's stem cells that signal for repair, and then there's stem cells that can actually get engrafted to replace organs. So, and we've done this for many years, which is a bone marrow transplant where people lose their bone marrow when they have chemotherapy, and then they need a new sort of immune system, and how through stem cells they can build that from a donor. But I think it's important that not all stem cells are alike, and where you get those stem cells, how they're delivered is important. And that's really where the clinical trials and the time is being invested, is to how to do this best to have an impact on your body. So it's, people are saying, well, it's been going on for so long, why isn't this mainstream medicine yet? And it's becoming more and more. We're seeing exciting results in clinical trials. And I really do believe we've seen the most progress, I think, in immuno-oncology is using people's immune system to treat cancer. And we'll see more and more in the regenerative medicine, I think, over the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, because every part of our body has, you know, every cell is so specific at what it does. We have a different cell for our skin versus our eye versus our hair versus our liver. So, you know, if it seems to me, and please correct me because I'm not a physician, but it seems as the body has the intelligence to create a body as it's growing. You know, we're not the same body are when we were 5-year-old little girls,
right?
You know, but we are the same being within this body. So there's an intelligence that knows how to create in every part of ourselves. So there must be some way to tap into that great wisdom within the body, that if any one part of the body can be replicated or grow, it would seem that the whole of it can in some way, if we find that right key to unlock that information.
Right. And then how do you take those and put them where they're needed? How do they get from one area to another area? There's also companies, one company on the board of Cellularity, where they're using stem cells from the afterbirth, from the placenta. Mm-hmm. And they're taking those cells, because when you think about it, mommy and baby, blood goes back and forth, and they don't reject each other for the most part. So what about those cells are so special that allows that to happen? So they're looking at using those immune cells from the placenta for regenerative medicine, for cancer therapies, and they're starting to develop those. So the question is, does it always have to be your own stem cells, or can it be stem cells of others? There's one lab where they actually take stem cells from a person's body and they co-locate them, meaning they put them in culture next to younger cells. And those younger cells tell the older cells they need to do something to become younger.
Interesting.
And they actually change. And they've done some early work where they have put cells back into people and seen that their immunity improves and their numbers look better. So these are early in trials, but there is a lot of research now looking to say, how do you make the cells that you have sort of better, supercells, younger, better, safer? How do you maybe take cells from another place like a placenta or a donor? And, you know, there are many ways now that we're looking at this to use these cells. Maybe you're born with a rare genetic disease and your DNA isn't proper. How do you take those cells, fix the DNA, maybe through CRISPR and some of that technology, put them back in, and treat a person with a rare genetic disorder, and then they're fine.
Well, I have to tell you, I was in tears watching that thing about CRISPR on the 3-day conference, because I have one of our own precious brothers died of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Oh, and so they discovered that it was not a genetic predisposition. There was some kind of anomaly that our mother was exposed to when my brother was in utero. So there is absolutely no other family member who is a carrier. So there's, you know, these anomalies that happen. And so, but what I was thinking of as you were just speaking is, you know, our woman's breast milk is this magical elixir, this beautiful magical elixir that is all that is required for a baby's body to grow. There's things that are already present that I think that we forget about, you know, how do we study what is this lactation? You know, what is in this milk? What is in the colostrum that gives the baby the mother's immunity? How do we help to keep that flowing, literally flowing? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, you wonder about this. In the Native American wisdom, they speak about every human is born into the first ocean, which is the amniotic fluid. And so what is in that amniotic fluid that maybe we're forgetting to look at? Because this is the cosmos within the space that a human body is forming. There's something significant there.
And they're looking at that as well, looking at different sort of entities that surround cells from the amnion to see if you can repair and restore with those cells as well. So you're absolutely right. There's a wealth of tissue and cells and
information.
And you've got to figure out what we can use. And we're starting to do that now.
That's wonderful. So what are you doing right now? What is your big project that I know there's probably a million of them, but what are you doing to care for yourself while you're doing all of these things?
Yeah, you know, every time we have a conference, I learn something, right? And I think now one of the things from this conference is really to think about the food that you eat, how that affects the body. Take a minute to just stop and breathe and recognize how important that inflammation is to our bodies. And really just continue the work to bring people together, to enhance sort of the well-being of people around the world. And, you know, I sit on some boards and I've started a company called Spiritus Therapeutics. And, you know, I really am very focused on bringing people together, watching them get together and make things happen, have an impact. But also to your point is to stop for a minute on yourself, because it can be a rat race. You know, it's doing for everyone else and everything else first, and really stopping for yourself and your own health, because you can't help others unless you help yourself.
That's right. So tell us about the Spiritus Therapeutics. What is that, please?
So that's another stem cell company, where we realized early on through some work with Dr. Marilyn Glassberg that these cells can have an impact on the pulmonary function. IPF, which is a a terrible progressive disorder that destroys the lungs. People need transplants, and then eventually will die. And how do you use those, not the cells, but the information around it, these exosomes, if you will, to really be able to give them back to patients in a way that can impact improving the disease area, the tissue that's damaged, in a way that you can have an impact on their pulmonary function. So we've seen more and more people are looking at these exosomes. So it's not the cells, but it's what's around those cells, those signals, if you will, that really send messages for repair, and how do you give those back to patients? And so obviously this is early, it's in clinical trials, and we have to follow the guidelines of the FDA, but the hope is that we'll be able to use all of this areas of the body to treat people who are sick and have illness, and even for COVID, who will have some long-term effects from the virus.
Yes. So as you're involved with medical schools, right? You're still involved with medical school. Again, having had the opportunity to work with people in medicine, is how do you help them change the way that their medical curriculum is so that they literally understand that compassion is essential? Because people come into an institution typically because they're in pain or there's something terrible that has happened, whether it's a trauma or you're right in the midst of all of that. But how do you understand the compassion to let them be themselves so that they can calm down enough that their body will be able to work? So how do you bring that back in? Because this was very absent, as we know, in many medical institutions in terms of the curriculum.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of changes in curriculum. For example, many programs are going down to 3 years instead of four because in hospital is almost, I don't say less important. Obviously, when you're sick, you need to be in the hospital, but so much more emphasis is being put on the outpatient and the clinic, and they're teaching things like well-being and health. Obviously, having solutions so that can make a difference. You don't want people to get addicted to opioids. So what else is out there that they can do to affect pain and lower the pain that they have? Other tricks, other ways, as you said, for their immune system to get revved up to have an impact. But we're seeing that now. We're seeing that in curriculum. We're seeing people being taught to be more compassionate. I think part of it is to recognize disparities of your classmates and your patients and remember the Hippocratic Oath, which you said so eloquently, to do no harm, that everyone is created equal and you shouldn't be judgmental. Everyone has the right for healthcare. And so we're starting to see much more of that in medical school training, and I believe that will continue.
And I think also, thank you for that. And I think that we also have to look at those other individuals like nurses who are so, they are the face of medicine often. They're the ones. And as you said, you're trying to keep people out of the hospital. So that means that they're in their home. And those nurses that are home care nurses, how do we support, how do we care for the caregivers?
Yeah, that's a great point. And caregivers aren't just necessarily the professionals, but even family. It really has an impact. And I do think that telemedicine is really, really empowering. It's the ability and remote monitoring. It's the ability to bring information to a more skilled individual like a physician or a specialist and get feedback so that you don't necessarily have to disrupt the day, bring a patient into the hospital, back and forth. There's information exchange is really powerful, and it allows people that they can A, have an impact earlier in the process, but it doesn't necessarily impact their life so greatly and so disruptive to get answers to questions. So I think we'll see more and more AI, telemedicine, remote monitoring as tools to allow caregivers to not be as afraid to be able to impact, the health of someone else and really do a better job of caregiving, using as tools of knowledge to do that.
And You know, I have been a caregiver to different family members myself, and I understand that, you know, it is emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually exhausting. And there is no support necessarily for them, you know, because they might have to stop their job or they might have to. So I think that we have to broaden our whole understanding of healthcare, not just being so money driven. And we, how do we make it so we actually learn how to be healthy and care for everything?
We're starting to see that payers now are looking at really the root cause. Sometimes it may just be buying a refrigerator so someone can keep the insulin in it, right? They're more responsive to the whole environment that can be impacting someone's health and be more willing to support those areas, not just a medicine, if you will. So we're seeing more and more the ability for intervention at a more holistic level and even funding caregivers. They're actually paying caregivers now. It's reimbursable. So that's interesting.
That is interesting.
That's a newer concept that is very, very interesting. And I think we'll see more and more of that.
Well, and I think that might, and I may be speaking incorrectly, but I don't think so, is it's probably more women driven, you know, as because yourself as a woman entrepreneur, as a woman physician, you see from a different vantage point as a woman, as someone who maybe have had children, and you see from the very beginning what is required. Not just from the outside, how to mitigate a problem or how to step in when the problem already exists, but what are the needs or the comforts of food and comfort and shelter and safety and all of these things in order for someone to actually be well or to heal or to die well.
Yes, you know? That's interesting as well. Many people want to be at home, right? That's where home hospice has come from. And I think that's really been very empowering for people to die at home and with family and have the medication so they don't have to suffer as much. And, you know, we've seen a big shift in that area. And so I think these are all very, very important issues that you've
almost 25 years ago, which brought me into becoming an energy healer, was an experience with hospice. And then I became a hospice employee and started to study energy medicine simultaneously. So it was as though, well, this is the problem and this is what it looks like. You know, this is the reality of what is this thing that is keeping us alive? What is this beautiful journey we're on? That death is a part of life. It is not a failure. It's a part of life. And how do you let that be a beautiful death? Because you can have a beautiful death.
And many times it's harder for those around you than the person who's actually.
Absolutely.
So it's painful.
Because that's typically because there's unresolved issues.
Could be.
Often that is the big challenge. So what is the next big global event you're working on,
Dr. Yes, so we'll see, right? I'm waiting for a trip to go to Rome to talk about some things that may be next. And obviously, you know, I think $86 billion a year is the last thing I read is spent on healthcare as it relates to the environment. So obviously that's a very important piece and we need to be looking at that as well. So, you know, I'm just very excited about the future and technology and how that really is disruptive and can have an impact on human health globally and how we can work together to make a difference so that the planet stays, you know, for our children in a way that it should. And there's a lot more attention now towards that and we need to understand it and embrace it. And I'm really a believer that information's important, like yourself, things you're doing to help educate. It's critical. People are looking for information and it's confusing out there. There's between the internet and all the information, it's hard to sift through it and really understand what's important, you know, what can have an impact, you know, what you should be doing for your family, yourself, and the environment and your community. And we just need people to stop and listen and talk and dialogue and want to be part of the solution.
Absolutely. So are you writing any other books, or are you?
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I'm thinking about maybe one more. So we'll see.
Oh, I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah,
I think that would be wonderful.
We can come back and share with you what's next when we.
Please. Now, you mentioned that people can go and look at the Vatican Conference. Could you please give that link once again so that people could?
It's the VaticanConference2021.com, and you'll see it right there. And all the sessions are listed, all the videos. You can come and go as you please, watch the content. You could share it with friends. What's nice about, you know, it was sad in some ways not to be together. We always enjoy the few days of dialogue and communication. But the good news is these are very short bites. They're anywhere from 5 minutes to, you know, 30 minutes, and people can really be a part of the conversation and get educated. I thought it was an extraordinary few days, lot of information and incredible.
And if you happen to miss something, you can go back and listen to it again, which is really wonderful.
Exactly.
And so important that we have that open conversation, because no matter what our beliefs are, and a belief, you know, we have to be careful about our beliefs, because a belief can narrow your focus a great deal. But we have to understand that we all really are here for the same reason. We want to live. We want to be happy. We want to be healthy. We want to have families. We want to feel safe. We want to contribute. And how do we let us all work together in that way without hitting anyone against one another?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even patient stories, people like to share. People don't want to feel alone. So having communities, you know, certainly the internet is allowing for that, is you don't need to be alone. You can reach out, and people are out there. So I think we're seeing more and more communication, and, you know, I think it's going to be a bright future.
I think so too. And I really have enjoyed, I listened to your audiobook, because sometimes I just don't have time to read it all. But The Cells of the New Cure is a really wonderful book, and it's available on Amazon. Is it available elsewhere?
It is, and Kindle, and it was in Barnes & Noble. And it's, you know, we really try and go through different body parts and how this, the cells, the clinical trials are advancing to make a difference, that you can see how different cells are having an impact on everything from knee pain to cancer to autoimmune disorders. And it is the future of medicine. So to your point, the healthier you can be, the more you can keep your body fighting for those insults that come your way, the better off you'll be.
And Dr. Smith, is there any way that people can get in touch with you? And do you have a preferred way? Do you have a website that they could look at?
Absolutely. So it's Dr. Robin L. Smith. L is the middle initial. People can email me. I'm happy to receive emails at robin@robinlsmith.com or rsmith@thecurafoundation.com. So always happy to hear from anyone and dialogue and answer any questions. We're here for you.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today from your very, very busy schedule. I know how busy you are, and it's really an honor to talk with you. And thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you're doing for our world with such courage and wisdom and integrity. It's very important.
Thank you.
This is Elaine Grohman on Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. You too can make a difference. Your life matters. Go out and make a difference. Thank you.